Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we'd like to do for you a song comes from Swaziland. It's a song that I learned from my wife, who learned it from her mother. It's a healing song, and the words say, when I was able and healthy, I had many friends, but now that I am bedridden, I see many smiles on many faces. Bajabula bonke, uma ngilele phansi.
Gentlemen,
not to forget. And we thank all our callers for calling in and all our supporters. This is a continuation from yesterday's show, but we're going to get right to the callers. We have a caller straight out of the Chicagoland area. Area code 312, last 4-1-5-1-2. You're live on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. Where you're calling from? What is your comments, questions, and concerns, and your knowledge?
Yeah, this is how you doing, Shabaka.
Dwayne Lewis. Hey, how you doing there, Mr. Lewis? Yes, sir. I've been communicating with you, my man. Yeah, you know, on the internet. Appreciate you calling in. And as yesterday, if you might have heard our podcast, you know, we was mentioning that we were taught not to forget. And as you know, the American ethos sits up here and teaches us currently today and our young people, well, you know, you people need to forget about the past. You people need to forget about slavery and the barbarism of it. And, you know that common Kool-Aid, man, that they've been serving us, you know, about for the last 40 years. But as we had pointed out yesterday is that they made it a point for us not to forget by way of the Brandon Iron as we got off the ships here in the Americas as cattle. They made it a point for us not to forget as they was beating us with those whips, putting those marks on our back. They made it a point for us not to forget as they raped our women, violated our daughters, sold our daughters with their pedophile selves. And then in addition to, we're going to talk about the castration and the demasculization of the black male on the plantation system is because this is affecting us today with the post-traumatic slave syndrome, and this is why you have all this homosexuality being flagrant in a cesspool called Los Angeles, California, and a section of the city of LA called Hollywood. They want to pay black men to wear dresses, to go up there to play these effeminized roles and what have you, and keep perpetuating this brain death that was given to us on the plantation. In addition to, ladies and gentlemen, and please give us a call with your comments, questions, knowledge, and concerns at 646-564-9630. I'm Shabaka Sankara, your host of Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. And I'm also the executive producer, and the one and only Mad Dr. D out of Southern California is our producer. This here, folks, and also too, Mr. Lewis, I'm going to mention Ida B. Wells is because in Chicago, as you know, they had a housing project named after her, and I believe Mrs. Barnett, Ida B. Wells Barnett, had did a lot of her work right there. And this is some information of her as a journalist that she had published, I believe, around the early part of the 20th century. What she did was that she got information on the blacks that were lynched and murdered by mobs. In the year 1882, 52. In the year 1883, 39. In the year 1884, 53. And all the way, it goes all the way up to 1899, and I'm just going to read off the numbers for each of the consecutive years, starting from 1885 to 1899. 164, 136, 128, 143, 127, 171, 192, 241, 200, 1894, 190, 1895, 171, 1896, 131, 1897, 156, 1898, 127, 1899, 107. And then, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we know that went on, you know, beyond that during the Jim Crow era as well down in the South. And I believe the most infamous one is what happened with Emmett Till down there in the year 1954. So therefore, so all you integrationalists and assimilationists and civil rights sympathizers are welcome to call in at 646-564-9630. Press 1 to speak live on the air. And we really would appreciate some of our people who are around doing the Black Liberation movement as well, too. So as we go on here, is that the American ethos taught us not to forget that we were subhuman and three-fifths of a human being as per the United States Constitution, or one of them hypocritical documents that they said. Not to mention the fact that the Supreme Court ruling of 1857 in a Dred Scott case clearly stated, where the Chief Justice wrote the opinion of the court stating that persons of African descent cannot be, nor were they ever intended to be, citizens of the United States. So based on that reasoning right there, that throws the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments right out of the window. What are your thoughts on that there, Brother Duane?
You know, that was a lot. That was a whole lot. And I'm sitting here with a very bad tooth infection, and I'm in a lot of pain. You know, it's a lot I want to say, and you know how I am.
Yeah.
You know how I am online. I say exactly what I want to say. You know, I'm not afraid of no one and what they have to say. It doesn't bother me at all. You know, but, you know, sometimes I sit, you know, living alone, I sit sometime in tears just thinking about, you know, how my people are. You know, it hurts so bad. It really do. It hurts so bad, you know, that we just can't get ourselves together, you know, and work together. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about, you know, maybe we just should start in our own community, in our own neighborhood, and weed out and work out these people that infiltrated our community with these stores and shops and stuff. You know, let us open up little bitty things. If it have to be small, let it be small. If it's a small store, you know, then that way we can get rid of another alien store and just keep working until we done eliminated and took our communities back over. You know, our neighborhood back over. You know, I was raised in Chicago. You know, I was raised in the Inglewood community. You know, and I'm not ashamed of it, because back then in the day we was family. You know, it might have been gang. You know, it might have, you know, the man might have portrayed us as being all these here bad people. You know, but we wasn't bad. We respected one another. You know, even though it was a gang, we respected one another. We respected our elders. Everybody, mother was like mama to us. You know, and the daddies was dad. You know, and I was raised with the likes of Larry Hoover and Tennessee and Charles Ray and all these guys. I played baseball, football, basketball with these here guys. You know, they might have did things that maybe they weren't supposed to, but we were still family. We were still family, you know. And everything that they was trying to portray, like this here gun situation and these here murders and stuff that's going on in Chicago right now, all this stuff, I believe, to my opinion, is by design. You know, we used to sit out on 67th and Halsted, and the young guys, we used to talk about, you know, things that's going to happen, that's going to be happening in Chicago. You know, and we said, hey, you know what? They're going to come down through here, and they're going to tear this stuff down, and another race is going to be in this here community before we know it. Oh, yeah, and it's changing already. I look back at it now, not half the buildings that was there is there now. You know, they done put up a Kennedy King there, like right around 63rd, 64th, and Halsted in Chicago on the south side of Inglewood. You know, that's, you know, because they tore the one down on 69th and Wentworth and opened up the new one. So that whole area has been changed. You know, I came up in, I bought a home, me and my wife had bought a home over in Marquette Park, you know, a place where Martin Luther King had marched through they wouldn't let blacks, over in there. The block I moved on was, I was the first black person in that area, you know, and I wasn't liked at first. People started moving just because I had moved. I didn't care, you know. I mean, I came there to live. If you wanted to get along with me, that was fine. If you didn't, then that was your problem, not mine, you know. So I was going to run for Yeah, I was going to run for, you know, representative there. But, you know, and I had a politician at the time told me, he said, Wayne, let me tell you something. I was sitting in his office while he was smoking a cigarette. He looked me in my face. You know, it was more of a threat than trying to give me advice and going to tell me, well, Dwayne, you know, you're going to have to know how to lie, cheat, steal, and kill in order to be a politician, you know. And it was more, mm-hmm. and I took that really as a threat, you know. But see, right. at the time, I didn't know better. You know, I had a couple of TV stations and stuff that was willing to bag me, you know. But at the time, you know, I was thinking about my family. You know, I said, okay, well, I ain't really got time for this. I'll kind of enjoy what I was already doing, you know, and so I just stuck with that. But I still let the people in the community know, you know, because I was on television a lot, you know, that, you know, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm going to still be around and making sure that things get done the way it was supposed to get done, you know, and, you know, but then if you notice that they start tearing down all the projects in Chicago, especially along the Dan Ryan Expressway, where they built
yes,
the new
sir,
White Fox.
Yes, I got a question there for you. Okay, yeah. I got a quick question for you. Is it true, because, see, I was born in the city of Chicago. All my family had migrated there to Chicago from Alabama at the beginning part of the 21st century. And then after I was born, you know, in the late 50s, then my family started migrating out west to Los Angeles. And I myself grew up in South Central L.A. And the gentrification of what you're talking about, you know, is redundant and it's quite flagrant, particularly out here on the West Coast as well, too. And based on what you're telling me, what's happening in the city of Chicago, the same pattern is happening, particularly in Oakland, which is the birthplace of the Black Panther Party, and we definitely want to give a shout-out to New Era Chicago of the great work of what they're doing is shutting down those Asian businesses. I love it, I love it, I love it. Control our own black economics, and Chicago, Illinois used to be a mecca for black businesses because, you know, they even had a Chicago Renaissance right there on the south side, man, because, I mean, let's look at all what we got from there. Lou Rawls, Jerry Butler, you know what I'm saying? Tyrone Davis, you see what I mean? And then I remember one summer I went through there and I drove down Halstead, you know, as you said, because I had family members who lived way out there on 98. So therefore, man, I'm down in downtown. I said, let me just go through my birthplace right here and just to feel the vibe. And so I turned on the radio station, man, and there was old Mr. B.B. King, the one and only, singing a song called Why I Sing the Blues. And that there was a first time that I ever heard it. And the sad part about it is, Brother Dwayne, is that we have lost our cohesiveness amongst ourselves. You see what I mean? It's because you get a lot of these brain dead Uncle Tom Negro leaders who are still sitting at a lunch counter begging for a cup of coffee, but then they sit up there and amazed by why the hell the police are murdering us, okay? It's because I saw what they did there to the brother on the south side there, man, when they put 16 rounds into him, man, and he's there on the ground. Now, come on, like I said, in regard to what happened in Minneapolis there when Mr. Castile was murdered in front of his wife and baby by that chump Yanez, you know, who they let off, who they gave a nice pension to, which is just like the slave catches that they used to do the slave patrollers, because we all know this is how the modern day police departments evolved. You see what I mean? That bounty on
exactly.
us. So therefore,
exactly.
the Los Angeles Police Department, sir, okay, they are notorious for murdering us. And then if you recall the case that happened with one of their former officers, Christopher Dorner out there, man, that wrote his manifest, you see, and he had put it out there that since the Rodney King situation, a lot of those officers who stood around there and watched that attempted murder case happen, right, that they had gotten promoted up to lieutenants, captains, and sheriffs, and what have you. You see, so Dorner went out there. He reported misconduct, you know, by some of his superiors. They go out there, they smear him. It's because the union representative who was supposed to represent Officer Dorner had turned on him. And keep in mind, the Los Angeles Police Department has a very, very powerful union called the LAPD Police Protective League. And so they, in turn, the union representative who was supposed to help Mr. Dorner, in turn, had turned on him, and Mr. Dorner had stated in his manifest, he says, yeah, old Captain such and such, a dirty SOB, you turned on me, so check this out, I got some work for you. And he went out there and killed his daughter and her boyfriend. Then he goes and states later in his manifest is that you SOBs always kept referring to me with this NGI term, and although Shabaka's black experience enhances not condone the term, but we're going to use it, they always kept referring to the brother as the nigga. And he says, hey, and I told you people about it. So guess what, my man? You is a high-value target, too. Now, keep in mind that Dorner was a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy, man, and a Navy SEAL, so he had skills, you see what I mean? And he had showed them to be the cowards and the punks that they were, is that the lap dogs, as I call them, as in LAPD dogs, right, went out there, shot up a pickup truck that they thought that he was driving in. Now, get this here, brother. The pickup truck contained a woman and her daughter early in the morning who were delivering newspapers, man. They put over 100 rounds in the truck, and it's a wonder that them women wasn't killed, although one was injured, right? So so many months later, when they took the case before the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office, he gets up there and refuses to prosecute these officers because he says that they cannot help it, that they were scared and untrained, which is a classic case of incompetence. And then also, too, when they had sodomized black men in the presence of his children and mainly of his sons, and also, too, as they quartered him and degraded him, and they did it with the woman being pregnant, saying that she would project that fear into her unborn child, and this is where your demasculization starts, with the ass scratching, your eyes are rising, you know, everything's fine, dog. I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. And then out there in Los Angeles, California, they sit up there and perpetuate that bullshit with them jigaboo movies and all that in the 1915s, 1920s, and all that, showing us up there eating watermelon and looking subhuman. But then I have to give some props out to Mr. Ozzie Davis and his wife, Ruby D, is because they went out there to Hollywood, man, in the 40s and what happened. Keep in mind, Mr. Lewis, at that time in Los Angeles, man, your black behind better not been caught up here in Hollywood, because the LA LAPD was sure put some work in on you. You better been somebody's maid, somebody's slave, you see what I'm saying, and whatnot. So they tried to upgrade the image of the black man and woman in Hollywood, which I appreciate. Then quite naturally, of course, they could only do so much. Another brother who tried to upgrade the quality of the black male image, and they trying to smear him, and he's in his 80s now, and that's Bill Cosby. You see what I mean? Because I remember he had a lot of positive shows from after he did the I Spy. He had a couple of variety shows on there. And then, of course, it sounds like that you and I are in the same age group, and you remember when the heavyweight champ Ali was in his heyday, he had always projected a positive black male image, and they hated him. And then the quote, you met the heavyweight champ? Okay.
Yeah, I met him at Parker High School. In Chicago.
Yo, yes, sir. Absolutely. Good. Real good. You know, and then, too, is that they don't want us to remember his positive image. Like, you get this brain dead trick, Charles Barkley, getting up there, man. He sound like he on dope. Slavery wasn't that bad, man. And then I even saw up there on Facebook where even one of these conservative former senators from Alabama says, Barkley, you got to be out of your mind, man. And he went down there and broke it down of how brutal they was, you know. So he says, I beg to differ with you. And then that other brain dead ass scratching Yasser boss Steve Harvey, I don't give a damn about slavery. See, man, coons like that got to go. Seriously, we got to disassociate ourselves with these cats. Me personally, I think these fools are guilty of treason. Okay, now,
and also,
the white media does, yes, sir. And also, too, what the white media does, that they will sit up here and, like Dr. Khalid Mohammed said, is that when you come up here and take a positive pro black stand, they're going to put up some ass scratching, boot licking, butt sucking, ass kissing Negro to sit up there to go against you. And just like what Brother Malcolm had said, how powerful the media is, will get you to hate the people who are trying to liberate you and to sit up there and get you to love the ones who are totally against you. Exactly. And another thing that I respect about Chicago is the black business that built there. Now, let's look what Mr. Johnson did over there. I believe he started over there off of on the south side of Chicago. He started in an apartment in 1945, shortly after him and his wife, Eunice Walker, were married about 1942-43. He started over a funeral parlor off of 18th and Indiana, if I'm not mistaken, and started there after he had borrowed $500 on, you know, his mother's furniture and went on there and built an empire. And the cool part about the Ebony and the Jet, man, really, man, it was our recorded archives of our history, because, you know, they covered everybody, even the heavyweight champ that you had met. Because after he had won the crown from George Foreman, he was on the cover of the Ebony in January of 1975. And he had made a challenge to black men to go out here and do something, you know, positive for the community. But as you know, like there in the city of Chicago, just like down in Panther Town, which is Oakland, California, which is the birthplace of the Black Panther Party, and in Los Angeles, they want to criminalize the black male for being in a household. They want to criminalize him for being the protector of his family. They want to criminalize him from being the provider of his family. And this is why I appreciate what Dr. Boyce Watkins is doing, that I see over the net with his financial Juneteenth, and is putting in the minds of our young people to become entrepreneurs and not employees. Because one of the statements he made that I have to agree with, that either you're going to be an entrepreneur or you're going to work one. Now, as far as this social media is concerned, as you know, the majority of the CEOs over there in Silifax Valley, as I call it on the net, are gay. Mm-hmm. And this is why we are having problems on our Facebook posts when they suspend us, when they tear down our pages, when we sit up there and speak against the popular version of what is true. So they still want us to sip this Kool-Aid. We must reject this Kool-Aid. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then not to mention mm-hmm. the fact, as you are very well aware of, that in the year 1966, there was a man, 25 years old, from Monroe, Louisiana, who was a law student over at San Francisco State University, who researched something called the Declaration and the Second Amendment, and he informed members of black men in the black community of Oakland that, hey, we have the right to carry guns to protect ourselves under the Second Amendment, exactly. Because the Oakland Police Department is out here murdering us. So what he did is that him and a few of his friends, from what I understand, had went out there and started exercising their constitutional rights of patrolling the police. And let it be known is that you go up here and try to murder us, that, hey, we will retaliate. So what had happened was the coward who was the chief of the Oakland Police Department at that time, by the name of Charles Gans, had went to a state assemblyman by the name of Mulford, who lived in a fancy area near Oakland called Piedmont, and he bum-rushed a bill up there in Sacramento, California, which is California state capital, like Springfield is the capital of Illinois, and they introduced mm-hmm. the Gun Control Act of 1968, and it was signed into law by some senile SOB who wound up becoming the 40th president of the United States. Oh, yeah. What was that bum's name? Ronald Reagan, you know, who had the special effects had special effects by Grecian formula and crazy glue, to quote Gil Scott heroin, and also too late. And then also too, let me say this here, is that on our introduction music of our podcast tonight and yesterday was the one and only Hugh Masekela live at the Village Gate that he recorded in the year 19. Yeah. Yes, sir. And the name of that song mm-hmm. is called The Healing Song. And he made that there in the year 1965, is because going back to tradition is the first step forward. And this is what Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced is all about. So, ladies and gentlemen, please give us a call at 646-564-9630. As me and Brother Dwayne here are having a dynamic conversation. And our topic tonight was that we were taught not to forget part two. We are continuing our discussion from yesterday to dwell further into this great impact of destruction on the melanated community throughout the African diaspora. The savage practices of the brutality of the European will be examined tonight as well, too. And also we're going to analyze of how these practices are still affecting us today here in these contemporary times. Now, another example of this here, Brother Dwayne, would be the one and only Dr. Ben Carson, who came up there with some diatribe, some lullaby bullshit about the slaves coming here as indentured servants and that they were looking for freedom and opportunity and all of this. Now, and it's very, very interesting that when they sit up there and espouse this garbage, you say, is that the sad part about it is that you will get those Negroes who will sit up there and will support it. And this is very, very disturbing. But however, we know what it is. It's from the plantation system. It's because, as we know, the Negroes only believed anything that Master had told them. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and particularly the ones who were born here after the first generations. I'm talking about after the ones that made the actual passage, you see. And I'm trying to pull some information up here on the net right now. And what it was is that it was a brother that made a post up here. And for those of you, you can message us up here at Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced on our like page as well, too. And what it is that this brother had posted up there information in regard to about how they lullaby us with this BS about that we sold ourselves off into slavery, but they don't say nothing about the thousands of African warriors that died trying to prevent the capture, you know, of so many of our people, you know, being kidnapped, taken away, and never being heard from. Again, and it's just very, very interesting is that the educational system here that indoctrinates our children's minds, excuse the expression, with bullshit, yes, that has to be addressed too, and we need to have more emphasis on homeschooling. So therefore, we can come about this mindset of our children just sitting up there being groomed to go to school in the public indoctrination centers, and then they start getting groomed to go off into the prison industrial complex system. You see what I mean? So that there just goes to show. Say that again, brother.
I just wanted to say one thing right quick.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got a grandchild, well, two granddaughters that's in school in southern Indiana, and both of them is in an all-white classroom. And so they were given out awards. And so we went, me, the mother, and I, we went there to, you know, to support our, you know, her daughter, my grandbaby, and for the awards. And as they was passing out the awards, they was like all the white kids got all the academic awards. And both of my grandbabies, both of them, one got an entertainment award. The other one got a smiley award. I'm like, what is this? You know, because now the classroom is full of white people, you know, and just us, we're the only black folks there. And I went to the oldest one, grandchild first, and the youngest one. And each one of them got, the teacher was like, every time when we come in the classroom, if anybody wanted to smile, you know, we just go to, you know, my grandbaby, you know, mention her name. And so we're going to give her the smiley award. Where is the academic awards? You know, because they could not give my grandbabies, and both of them is very intelligent. They couldn't give them no kind of academic award because all these white people was in there. And they did not want them black children, which I know they was more intelligent than they was. But they couldn't let them see that. They couldn't let these white folks see that. What is this teacher doing to where this black child is more intelligent and is more smarter than our child? You know, and that really, you know, she took both of them, tore those awards up. Both of them.
Good.
I wouldn't have let them have it.
Yeah, that's rude. Yes, sir, that really hurt. Absolutely.
It hurted them also.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely, man. And you see, and this is what I mean by this prepackaged BS, man, is, you know, of how the educational system sits up here and does this. And then just like what Carter G. Woodson had mentioned damn near 100 years ago, man, about the miseducation of the Negro. You see what I mean? And particularly there, you know, when you had all the educators coming about, man, what was that there? Tuskegee, Auburn, the A&T colleges and whatnot. And if you ever check out the Mohawk Conference that Dr. Jacob Carruthers, you know, that had presented, and he was a scholar out of your way, man, because I believe, you know, he had his institution and his center set up, you know, there on the south side of Chicago. You see what I mean? And he had mentioned the Mohawk Conference, and Rutherford B. Hayes, the former president, was there, and he is supposed to be a friend of the Negro, and he had stated that the only thing that black people should be worried about is learning the concept of how to work. No innovation, no ambition, keeping them brain dead. Now, here's a post on my wall that I'm going to read right here. The minds of black people have been so inundated by fraudulent, negative, racially devaluing disinformation about themselves from totally white sources that many blacks literally find it easier to believe that there's something inherently wrong with their race rather to accept that we've been lied to. It's a psychological warfare program, and this is what I mean there, Brother Duane, about how they taught us not to forget. Now let's look at the psychological damage on the plantation system. Always calling a man boy, you know, from the time he's a boy all through his youth. And then when he starts getting up here in his latter years, they start calling him uncle, like Uncle Remus, Uncle Ben, Uncle Tom, Uncle Ruckus, and all that old type of crap. And then the sad part about it is that when they was projecting the same type of bullshit, man, in the early days of Hollywood, you had a lot of these black actors who was coming out there at the time, like Amos and Andy and Rod Houston, man, you know, at least Hollywood is showing us. And then, you know, when people that came about, man, addressing this issue right here, saying, well, hey, this is derogatory. Y'all just want to be showing us as buffoons and stuff like this. Well, you're a black racist guy. Hey, man, and I'm going to say it out here on the world, and I hope the whole worldwide world hears me, and I'm going to say it again. You're welcome to call up at 646-564-9630. Press 1 to speak live on air. There's no such thing as a black racist in the United States of America.
Exactly.
Sir, we control no power structures. We control no power infrastructures, no financial infrastructures. We control no police department, okay? We control no food sources. We control no medical facilities or institutions. So actually, we are in no position to implement any type of racism. And then when we tried to go out here and organize to defend ourselves, the United States government comes up with the counterintelligence program, which was illegal within it. Anything with the Black Panther Party had proven was the hypocrisy of this white supremacy, such as the cases they try to frame against Newton and Seal, such as the case they try to frame our sister in Cuba with, Tupac's auntie. And then reading over that case is that even the officer had stated that he had lied to the grand jury in the New Jersey Turnpike incident, in which the state trooper Warren Forrester was killed, in which Assad Shakur was falsely accused and convicted and imprisoned for his death. He admitted that he had lied under oath to the grand jury. So which means is that whole case must be thrown out. And in addition to the hypocrisy of the collusion of the police murdering us flagrantly and blatantly that they are getting off, in addition to the hate crime that Dylann Roof had committed a couple of years back down there in Carolina, where he sat there and he lied in wait for over an hour and sat there and killed our people in the church. But then he's brain dead, ass scratching Yassa bosses coming out here talking about, well, we forgive them, when in actuality that these are acts of war that is being committed against us as a people. And to quote the words of Dr. Huey Percy Newton, as he had stated in the Huey P. Newton Reader, he says, when we had started the patrols in 1966, exercising our constitutional rights and protecting our people from being brutalized by the Oakland Police Department, it is very, very interesting of how the police murders have went down in the black community of West Oakland. Now, West Oakland looks a lot like West Chicago or the west side of Chicago, Mr. Lewis, except it's on a smaller scale.
Okay.
East Oakland looks like a smaller scale of Los Angeles, you see, but that is the birthplace of the Black Panther Party, and when I travel through there, I employ an ancient African proverb, which is, listen to the wind and hear the stories of long ago. And it's very, very interesting in that in my travels of my lifetime, started in the city of Chicago, where Fred did his thing, grew up in Los Angeles, where Geronimo did his thing, and Johnny Cochran sticking by him, and finally got Mr. Pratt freed after he was falsely imprisoned for 30 years. And then in my latter years to come to Oakland, California, the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. And then when I was doing a show for another network, we had brought up the subject of, should we form a militia? Hell yes, we as black men need to form a militia. You see what I mean? Because what are we going to do? If we're going to live on our knees or die on our feet. And let's look at all the brothers who had that spirit in them of being angry. You see, are we going to let those men who are castrated, you know, what they want us to forget about, die in vain? Are we going to let Emmett Till, who was born and raised there in the city of Chicago and went to visit his people down in Mississippi in 1944, are we going to let him die in vain? Are we going to let those proud black men and women that lost their lives in the Black Panther Party fighting tyranny and fighting human rights violations, are we going to let them die in vain? Are we going to sit up there and let little Bobby Hutton die in vain, who was murdered by the Oakland Police Department? And this is why I do not understand, man, these cats off in this rap industry talking about killing NGR, shooting NGR, NGR ain't this, the black woman is the B.I. Hey, why don't you rap cats come up with some equal opportunity, and why don't you go out there and go use those derogatory terms against other groups of people who are using the NGR term so loosely that it downright pisses me off. Well, you know, I don't see color guy and all that. And it's bad with that Kool-Aid, man, you know what I'm saying? And then to really confirm the Kool-Aid, you know, after that they indoctrinated us into the 1970s. Then they came with the 80s and the 90s with the crack cocaine that messed us all up from coast to coast. Massive incarceration, more deaths behind it, more gang violence behind it. Then the rap industry comes out there, kill a nigga, shoot a nigga, fuck a nigga, and all this other type of crap. You see, excuse my language right there, I'm just proving a point. But why don't they come out there with some equal opportunity against these other groups of people, too, and let's see how long it would last. I mean, man, you even got OTBs, meaning other than black, going out here using this NGR term loosely. So this goes to show, ladies and gentlemen, that something is very, very wrong. And what we have went through a social engineering experiment with intellectual de-evolution and regression. And then when our scholars come along to bring knowledge to us how to correct this deficiency, which I honestly believe it will take at least two generations to do it, because we definitely have to get, you know, our young people conscious and whatnot, and get them up off this social media type of crap. And I really do appreciate a lot of the RBGs out there and a lot of the pro-blacks out there hitting my inbox, letting me know of some of these pro-black sites that I'm going to be signing up as well, too. But I'm constantly up here ripping and running because, you know, I do public relations. That's how I make a living for myself. But definitely have to get that going on, is because Facebook, Twitter, you know, those places up there, Dwayne, as you know, man, they're based up there near San Francisco, California. You know, and San Francisco is Boys Town. Yeah, you see, and I remember one time, man, now keep in mind, man, you got a lot of rich black history there in San Francisco, too, is because, you know, during the slave days, man, and I think Frederick Douglass was one of them, you know, that they would jump in to jump the ships, you know, like from Carolina, Maryland, man, New Orleans, or what have you, and they'll go work those ships. And during the time of the gold rush, man, when the ship was going in San Francisco, man, a lot of them, man, not only the brothers, but a whole lot of other people, man, would jump those ships, man, and go up there towards Sacramento, man, which is only 80 miles away at the time, trying to go hit the gold country, which is like about 50 miles from Sac, you know what I mean? And from Placerville to Auburn, California, which is the old Highway 49, and that there is where they discovered gold in California, you know. Oh, yeah. So Freddie D., as you know, he was a writer, and he had wrote, man, that they had abandoned so many ships in San Francisco Bay, is that the crooked-ass San Francisco Police Department, man, took them and moored them and turned them into city jails. And so, yes, sir. And then, like how they used to have a black community over there, two of them actually, and that is being gentrified real bad, which is the Fillmore District and Hunters Point. And that is where you had a lot of, you know, the black communities over there. You see, it's because when black people were coming to California, you know, to get off and working in these war plant jobs, you know, during World War II, a lot of them was coming to Northern California, you know, from back east, from the south, you know, working in those shipyards over there in Mare Island, where they were building a lot of ships up there during World War II. And then down in Southern California in Los Angeles, a lot of them was coming out there, man, to the L.A. area, working out there at McDonnell Douglas, Hughes Aircraft, Northrop Corporation, who was building all the planes and stuff for World War II. So then, as you know, what happened with the Black Wall Street in Oklahoma in 1921, of where white America just went there and bombed it from the air. You know, they got in the air and they threw bombs out of it, and that there was the first aerial assault that you had in U.S. military history. And we were prospering in a Black Wall Street because we were forced to trade with each other. Integration and ass-scratching in Yasser Boston was the biggest detriment to our black economical power ever than before, because what had happened was you was forced to deal with your black grocer, your black tax preparer, your black accountant, your black doctor, your black dentist. So as soon as these crackers had saying, okay, you coons can, Negroes can come up here and spend your money over here, we went on there, man, and abandoned black business, you see, once again, Negroes being miseducated. Once again, the Kool-Aid that they shove down our throats. Oh, well, you know, I can sit up there, you know, and spend my money with white folks. But yet, though, here's your black businessman over there that needs to make a living as well, too. You see, but you go up there and you abandon him. You see what I mean? And then what's happening right now? Yes, sir. And then what you got going on right now is you got all these other groups of people coming into the black community sponging us. Man, these is leeches. You walk in there, hey to my brother, hey to my brother, man, I'm not your brother, you damn parasite. You up here trying to get my money and you disrespect our people. You sell us low quality garbage. You overcharge us. And then, and I appreciate what, yes, sir, and I appreciate what them brothers did down there in Dallas, Texas, man, because I think the new Black Panther Party had went down and stepped to a couple of those merchants and said, hey, man, why are you charging our people taxes on non-taxable items? Why do you disrespect our people? You see what I mean? And this is why I appreciate, man, what New Era Chicago is doing there, man, one neighborhood at a time. And this is why I appreciate not too far from you there what New Era Detroit is doing about that water crisis back there. And we've got to build us some infrastructures on power, on water, on land, to grow our own food, build our own industries, and put our own people to work. And then we got to come up here and figure out how we could connect with the brothers on the continent, is because, as you know, the Chinese are there taking all the silicon and cobalt and tungsten up out of Zaire and Angola, and they in turn take the raw materials, ship it over there to China. They build it, they manufacture it, and then they in turn take those semi-finished goods and then they put it on those ships from Hong Kong or what have you and push it right across the Pacific. And I sit right there at Frisco Bay watching all that shit coming in, singing that song like Otis Bay, like Otis Redding said, sitting here on a dock of the bay. And I'm looking at all these ships, yes sir, watching the ships roll in, watching them roll out again as they bring in all our raw minerals and resources over there to Silicon Valley, in which they in turn and selling them with them Samsungs, them iPads, them Apples, you know, overcharging us for that garbage, spying on us with that garbage. And as you know, is that they censor our pro-black groups. And I just want to sit up there and say to them, MF, that, hey, if you don't like what we're posting, then don't read our posts. Okay? If you don't like this truth, okay, you're not going to stop this truth, okay? Because, see, something is in the air. And this is why I appreciate, Mr. Lewis, you know, the generations after me, of where I see them across social media, is that where they say, hey, we are not our grandparents, we will whoop your ass. And I really appreciate it there, Mr. Lewis, when the dump that I knew was buying the election, and I knew that that sack of shit was going to be the 45th president, when the dump had went out there to the University of Illinois at Chicago. And I appreciate the brothers there for stepping up there, shutting him down. And that bastard is going to sit up there and say in Carolina, we'll punch him in the face and I will pay your legal fees. And then these crackers go up here and punch this brother in the face and, you know, pretty much knock him out, man. And, you know, old boy needed some help to get up out there, you see. And then the old redneck, well, you know, I just didn't like it. Attitude, so I just used the right hand and just went on there and hit that nigger and put him in his place. And what does this coon-ass kumbaya Yasa boss does? Gets up there on social media with a YouTube video talking about that he accepts that old cracker's apology on YouTube and hugs him. Perfect opportunity, man, to sucker punch his ass with a left hook and a right hand, man. I mean, I couldn't stand that for that. You see what I mean? So this is what I definitely appreciate about what my birthplace did of shutting that bastard down when he went out there to the University of Illinois, Chicago. And the beauty of it is, man, you brothers didn't even announce it. You just went out there and put the work in on his sorry ass. You see what I mean? And then I loved it when he sat up there and ducked in a secret service, went up there to go protect that trick, and he looking like he's shaking in his boots about to shit in his pants, man, like some female, man. Later for the dump. You know, I got a few choice words, you know, to say on it. But we're down to our last 7 minutes here, ladies and gentlemen. Having a very, very dynamic conversation with Brother Dwayne here calling from Chi-Town. We appreciate it. So if anybody here want to get in here on our last few minutes, you're welcome to give us a call at 564-9630 and press 1 to speak live on the air. And also, too, Brother Dwayne, another thing that we want to look at, too, with this brutalization of the slave owners, because as we know, the slaves were property just like cattle. And would you be, and if you were a cracker, you know, you could do whatever you wanted to your slave. You could maim them. You can castrate them. You could brand them. You could rape his 3-year-old daughter. You could rape his wife. God forbid me for saying, you know, on this one, even his own mother, you see. And then I appreciated some of the work that Dr. Frances Quest Wessing has done over the years, where she talks about the the brutality, the rapes, and the sexual exploitation about it. But we're going to be doing a show on that there in the future. And we're definitely putting a shout out there, you know, to any of the sisters who would like to go up there and co-host that show. You'd be more than happy and more than welcome to host it on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhances, because it's too sensitive of an issue for me. And I would not be responsible, you know, for my comments on that. And then, of course, this business with Serena Williams, you know, is very, very sad. You know, she's, you know, with her bed wench mentality, I hate to say, is because when I was living in Los Angeles, I remember what her and her sister were living out there in Compton, which is south, way south of South Central. And Compton is its own city, you know, just like, let me see, what's that city out there near you guys? Markham, I believe, you know.
Okay,
and then her dad, you know, had. Yeah, yes, sir.
No, just say it was a little suburb, okay. Markham, yes.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. And then, you know, then she goes out there, you know, sits up here and dealing with these cave beasts. You know what I'm saying? Very, very sad. And then the sad part about it is about how that's was another process of how they lowered our value as men as well, too. And it was all designed that way. And then in the future, we will be examining another situation about how the white female had violated the black male on the plantation system in the future. Like I said, you know, I really have to get myself together for that one. It's because we all know is that that's why the brother was castrated. Not so much of him going after the white female, but the white female gone after him. And then, of course, as we all know, what old Missy Ann would say, if you don't do it to me, I'm going to tell Master that you raped me. So the brother was damned if he did, damned if he don't. And if you ever saw the motion picture Mandingo's with Ken Norton in it, it dealt exactly with that situation right there. And then also, too, the state of Texas has stated that they're not going to teach the history of slavery and its curriculum to elementary school children anymore. They're going to say that they came here as indentured servants. And another thing, too, Brother Dwayne, I'm going to use these last three minutes as well, too. For those of you who sit up there to talk about these Irish slaves and Irish indentured servants, show me where the slave master went and raped Irish girls and Irish women. Please show me where Irish men were lynched and castrated and had their private parts put in their mouths. Also, too, please show me of where Irish men were quartered by horses, where a horse was tied to each limb, both arms, both legs, and the horses were hit to run in four different directions, you know, to dismember the person that they had tied the horses to. So please show me information on that. And if you cannot, then shut the hell up. Put that lullaby Kool-Aid, okay, is because it is bullshit. That's why. The fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, is that white America does not want to be held accountable for the atrocities that it has committed against people of color. In its hypocrisy, when J. Edgar Hoover had issued out his directive launching his counterintelligence program, is that the biggest threat to national security of the United States was the Organization of Negroes. And keep in mind there, too, for the you assimilationists, he also did the same thing with the civil rights movement, too, because Martin Luther King was another one of his targets. And we all know that he declared the Black Panther Party public enemy number one for simply feeding hungry children on their way to school. Then the orders that he had gave down where they'd use extortion tactics, where you had these sellouts who had infiltrated the Black Panther Party, giving up the information, just like how they did Chairman Fred Hampton of Chicago chapter, where that Negro where that Negro had went there and put second all in Chairman Fred's cup of coffee the night before he was murdered in December of 1969, in addition to of how they went there and planted drugs on various members of the Black Panther Party, shattered their family units. Well, if you don't come snitch on such and such, we're going to hit you with this case right here, just like what they did with Julius Butler, who was spying on Brother Geronimo Pratt, who knew that Mr. Pratt was in Oakland, California in October of 1968 at the time that the murder of which he was convicted of, which Mr. Pratt was later found to be innocent. And we want to give a shout out there to the memory of Mr. Johnny Cochran, who stood by Mr. Pratt, you know, doing his ordeal, and that Johnny Cochran did do a lot of pro bono cases, Mr. Lewis, for blacks in Los Angeles who were victims of racism by the murderous Los Angeles Police Department. Okay, Brother Dwayne, you got any closing comments tonight in our last few seconds here?
Yeah, I didn't want you to forget Hal Washington, you know, the first black mayor of Chicago.
Yes, sir.
You know, he
yes,
was, you know, very intelligent man. He was unifying the black community, and I think that's why they murdered
okay.
him. They had to make it look like he died, you know, on his own,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And but they did it like that, bro. They knew Chicago would have burnt down to the ground, you know, because way they did it hurt it real bad. But anyway, man, you know, you got my number. You can call me anytime you get ready. We can conversate. We can brainstorm.
Yes,
you know. Whatever
yes,
you want to
Absolutely.
Do, because it's a lot of questions need to be answered, and we got a lot of people
yes,
out here that want answers. You know, so
yes,
we
sir.
Need to
and
get together and talk anytime.
Yes, sir. We will most definitely, and I will be inboxing you, man, and be giving you a personal call within the next 24 hours. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that there concludes our show tonight on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, part two of where we were taught not to forget. And I see that none of the coons or the ass scratches called up, you know, which is fine, which is great, is because your days are over anyway. And the black community would really appreciate it if you guys would go kill yourselves. But I'm just joking. Okay, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and have a nice night. And I'm signing off from Tacoma, Washington. Thank you once again, Mr. Lewis, and have a nice night.
Thank you. And you too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.